Good morning, everybody. Dr. Ben Edwards here. Welcome to another episode of You're the Cure. Excited to have some guests in studio today, some local guys who are doing amazing stuff. There's plenty of not amazing, great news out there in the world, and I try not to listen to any of that, actually. And I recommend most people tune that out. But when I do peruse some of the headlines, you know, a lot of the negative stuff is around doomsday stuff and just, we all know, just the crazy globalist agenda that's out there. But there's another agenda, and it's the kingdom of heaven. And that kingdom culture is about love and loving your neighbor and loving your neighbor more than yourself even. And that can be manifested in lots of different ways. And I think my guests today are manifesting that in an amazing way, and specifically related to health and food and Veritas and producing your own food. Some of the other headlines I've read lately, it's about food too, but it's all man-made lab-grown factory meat just got approved by FDA. The safe level of glyphosate, which is Roundup, that just got diminished and you lowered again, and pretty much that's in all food now. I just read an article about in Israel, some scientists did a 3D printing of a fish fillet. It has the same taste and texture as a real thing. I was reading about organic farmers can now use chicken poop for fertilizer, but the chicken from confined, concentrated animal feeding operations, where these chickens produce excrement that's full of drug-resistant bacteria, it's full of antibiotics, hormones, a lot of stuff that's not beneficial for you. And they can use this as fertilizer on organic farms. Another article I read recently, Bill Gates had funded this project, and it's a special kind of synthetic. I don't even know what's in it, but I know it's not going to be beneficial for you, but it's called Apeel, A-P-E-E-L, and it's this clear coating that they're putting on apples and avocados, cucumbers, lemons, limes, even organic ones. They're allowed to put this on there. You can look for this. They do have to label it. It's this little sticker. It looks like an apple, but A-P-E-E-L. It's a synthetic coating meant to keep the food kind of preserved longer, but I can promise you, we don't need to wait for 10 to 20 years to see the studies come. That is not going to be beneficial for you. God made the perfect covering or coating for your apple, and you can't improve on God. So eat real food. It's real simple, but it's harder and harder to find real food that's not some way adulterated. So you got to go local, and you got to know your farmers, you got to know your growers. So farmers markets are great, local producers that you can get to know and go to their farm, that's great, and I highly encourage it. And if you find some guys like this, support them. We need real food, we need local food, food security, but food nutrient dense food. And the best way to get nutrient dense is to get local and get guys that are tending their soil in a manner that's kingdom minded, meaning for the benefit of creation, for the benefit of that soil, for the benefit of the plant, ultimately for your benefit, the benefit of the body when you consume that high quality nutrition. So enough of that. We've got Chris and Casey in studio today to talk about their journey. These guys are doing amazing stuff producing some vegetables and some fruits, and it's available at the Merck. If you live here locally, or if you're coming from out of town, come by the Merck and do some grocery shopping this summer, this growing season. This is a time to stock up and even start canning maybe some of this stuff. So we want to support guys like this. And if you're a grower out there and you get in touch with us, we'd love to try to support you too. But I want the audience to hear the story. Chris and Casey's story is so amazing. Touched me, it's touched Jamie, my wife, and all of us at Veritas. And we're just so grateful for the relationship, and really for y'all being who God made you to be and walking in love, walking in the truth, and putting your money where your heart is too, because it takes a commitment and your emotion, your blood, sweat, and tears. That's what we're going to talk about, this amazing garden that's growing out in East Texas. So I don't know who wants to, or excuse me, East Lubbock, who wants to take the mic first, but I'm just going to open the floor. Casey, we'll go with you. Really just share your story. Tell the audience who you are, what you're doing, why you're doing it, where you came from, how you got to where you are today, and really just share as much as you want so people get to know you. And it's a neat story. So thank you for being here today, and just really let the audience hear your story.
Well, thank you so much, Ben, for inviting us on. It's an honor for Chris and myself to be here. It's my first podcast I've ever done, so thank you. But it's a good cause, and we definitely want to tell our story because it's nothing about us. What we want to tell you is it brings glory to God. So if you would have told me maybe, I don't know, 3.5, 4 years ago, you'd be a farmer, I'd kind of smile and laugh at you, but I never would have thought I'd be a farmer. But, you know, God put a prompting in my heart about 3 years ago to learn how to grow my own vegetables and be more self-sustaining. And I had recently met a really good friend named Chris, who's here with us, and he's going to share his story. But he was already growing flowers, but he had a strong interest in vegetables as well for a long time. And so I had a prompting to really learn and how to grow vegetables and teach my children this thing about growing vegetables. So I live in the city of Lubbock. I don't live outside of Lubbock. I don't have a lot of acreage, but I just wanted to find some affordable land and to learn how to grow vegetables. And I feel like God opened doors and brought some land available, and Chris and myself decided to partner and buy it together. And we formed an LLC called Elohim Netah. And that might sound weird when you first hear it, but that's the Hebrew name for God is Elohim. And Netah means planted. And so Chris and myself, we wanted from the very beginning God's name to be on the legal documents, to be the owner of the land, and we wanted to manage it. Because when it comes down to it in this world, God owns everything, and he gives us things to manage as stewards, and we have to be good stewards of the things he gives us. And we wanted him to get the recognition as the owner from the very beginning. We bought a tractor together, and then we started planning the infrastructure. And so we got a well drilled, and it was a game changer to grow things. You need a well, and water in many ways in the Bible, it's like representing of the Holy Spirit. Until you have that in your life, you're not going to be able to flourish. Just like a dry land of anywhere with stickers and thorns, that's what we came to. And Chris and myself, we started meeting there, I think, every Friday morning at 6 a.m. to pray and to kind of study the Bible together and just pray over God's guidance of what he would have us do out there for wisdom, for direction, because we both recognize we weren't professionals. And Chris had a lot more experience than myself. But we still wanted to honor God and get God's guiding in this. So we met once a week on Friday mornings at 6, and we prayed and walked around the land, just prayed for the neighborhood, prayed for the neighbors, prayed for the hearts that were there. Because in our minds, we wanted to grow vegetables, but we also wanted to have an impact on the kingdom for reaching those in the area that needed a bright light, just needed some just something different. And so that's where I guess the origin of Elohim Netah came from. Is in Genesis 1, it says Elohim is the first mention of God, and that's the name in Hebrew. And in Genesis 2:8, it says Elohim Netah. It says God planted a garden in the east. So that's why we decided to name our legal document that after Scripture. And so it would, one, give him the ownership and bring glory to him, and his name would become known. And one of the desires God has is that his name is known. And so as people, even as Christians, they say, what does that mean, Elohim? I mean, they may have never heard that. Well, that's just the Hebrew name of God in the Bible. So that's the reason why. And Chris may have something to add to this. I'll let Chris kind of fill in some gaps I may have left out.
There's a lot of facets to this operation. And you know, and one is that there's a lot of wisdom in the Bible. And in the story of Joseph, he had 7 good years to prepare and to plan ahead. And he was wise and took advantage of it. And, you know, we're living in pretty stable times. This is a stable economy. But when I look at the life of my grandfather, he went through the Great Depression. He went through World War II. You know, things are not always stable. And So one facet of this operation is, you know, it's good to plan ahead, and I had no skill in farming back in 2015, but there is a prompting in me that I should probably, you know, learn how to do this. And also, when you look at, again, when you study the Bible, you see that the nation of Israel, there's a promise that comes with them, you know, that they'll be a blessing to the whole world. And when you look at what they're doing over there, they are taking a desert climate. They are growing in the Negev desert with less water than we have in Lubbock, and they're making it fruitful. And they are leading the way in terms of agricultural technology, even computer technology. And so I started looking at what they were doing. And if God is preparing Israel, they have no oil, they have no other, all the other areas in that area, all the other nations in that area have oil or some kind of access to some kind of lucrative product. But, Israel had nothing, yet God was moving Israel in this area of advanced technologies. And in one area, they were advancing agricultural technology. The invention of the drip system, of drip tubing, came from a Jew. So I started, and I was considering Lubbock, and I remember I tried planting my first seed in the ground and watering it, and I thought it would just do great. But the West Texas soil is it's like this kind of, sandy, clay, tan. There's no it may sprout, but there's no it doesn't thrive. And so that kind of really began my journey of like, why is this, I think it was a watermelon plant I tried growing, and it just didn't do well. So I really started researching, what the soil needed in order for a plant to be healthy. So I started gaining an interest in like soil biology and what makes a really healthy soil. And then I was kind of studying how they were farming in Israel and the methods they were using and a lot of the automations that they were implementing. I think our farming practices have come from about, we've had 90% failures, 10% successes, but those successes we hold on to and then we expound on it. And so sure enough, the operation we have in East Lubbock, Elohim Atah, God planted, it is an operation that is, that came from a prompting from the Holy Spirit that is using methods from Israel, which, is God's chosen nation. And it's a high tech. I call it a high tech farming operation, because we're doing, like when we have other farming friends come over, they're like, no one else is farming like this. For me personally, my background is computer science, and I've kind of combined my love of technology and also farming, and I'm combining it together. And and we can, once we get a system in place, there is weed management. I don't think I can ever automate weed management, but the watering system, soil health, a lot of those can be more automated. And so it's thriving out there. People are always surprised when they see what's being produced out in this bare and desolate landscape. And we found a way to make it produce, and we found efficient ways of doing it. So one aspect of it is, I think it's important for an area to have the skill and the knowledge to be able to grow food. And you have to work with what you have. West Texas was, people have tried farming West Texas before, modern technology, and it's very difficult. But we do have technology, and that makes it a lot easier. We actually have a longer growing season than a lot of other areas. So there's actually an advantage now with Lubbock, kind of like how there is in Israel. So that's just one aspect. That's just one facet of it. It's wise for an area, any city, whatever city you're in, to have, food security, to have a way of if we saw during the time of COVID, the supply chain broke down, mm-hmm. and we were having the supply chain, they couldn't expect a certain demand of product, so they couldn't anticipate how many product they should make. And then because they didn't make the right amount, there was either too much or too little. So the supply chain broke down in this economy. And so it can happen again, And so we have these good years. We should be, at least setting up, with the resources we have now, just, being ready, Mm-hmm. And, if nothing happens, that's great. We have this local food source. And so that's one facet of it. Another is, nutrition. I'm very passionate about nutrition and health. In my personal testimony, I play a lot of sports at a pretty high level, and if you follow like other like athletes, what sets like people like Tom Brady, Lionel Messi, Cristiano Ronaldo. I mean, these are athletes who are playing at a high level because they take really good care of their bodies, mm-hmm. and they play into the later years. I mean, Tom Brady was 40 plus years, and it was because he was a proponent of nutrition, mm-hmm. and the best nutrition comes from very good quality food. And like what you said earlier, there is a lot of adulterated food, that's not the best stuff to put in your body, especially if you want to be performing at a high level. And if you're not playing sports, even if you want to be working in your business at a high level or being the best doctor or whatever it is that you're passionate about, you know, what you put in your body affects how good of a thinker you are. You know, the stamina you have for being able to sit down and read and without getting tired. Mm-hmm. So, part of our goal is to create very nutrient dense food. You can actually measure the sugar content of food, and carrots are supposed to have like a sweet flavor. You don't go to the store and buy carrots that have this kind of sweet, you know, flavor and crispy texture, but that's possible to grow, but you have to do it in a right way. And to get that kind of product, you know, you really can't mass produce it. Maybe you can, but it's not being done right now on a mass production scale. There are really interesting experiments going on, well, not experiments, but really interesting produce. For example, in Japan, they're growing these amazing tasting strawberries. And they grow in these very kind of artificial environments, and they're putting the right amount of nutrition in there. And they sell these strawberries for like hundreds of dollars. And it is, and when people try them, they're like, it tastes like pure sugar. Like it's, they're packed with nutrients and they're packed with flavor. Nutrients and flavor go hand in hand. And whenever I go traveling, I love going to UPIC farms and trying these foods straight from the farm, especially these small local farms. And the food's amazing. I could be like a millionaire and I can't buy that kind of food in a grocery store. I can't go, you know, I'm not going to name stores here in Lubbock, but I can't go to my local grocery store and buy this, the same kind of food I can pick at a farm. So this desire also just to grow really good tasting food, nutrient dense food, you know, that was another facet of this operation that Casey and I shared. And then third was also the kind of this ministry component. Both Casey and I, you know, have a heart for evangelism, and, you know, one of the, you know, something that all people can really relate to is God's creation. Mm-hmm. And there is something beautiful about, you know, about farming, about colors, the flowers that are, you know, on a plant, and then it turns into some kind of produce. And also when you look at like well-manicured farms or gardens, like that, it's really pleasing to the eye. The first job, you know, God gave man was tending a garden. Mm-hmm. And so that was something else that, you know, we have these community events every, you know, for us every Friday or Saturdays, and we have people come over and international students or, you know, neighbors from the East, and it's just a great way of building relationships, and it's something that we all have in common is a desire to appreciate beautiful nature. So you know, that's just kind of there are several facets to this operation, but it's something that definitely God has had his finger on, and it's we're only going to keep expanding and going to keep growing. I kind of look at it as a research farm right now. You know, we're figuring things out, and we're seeing what works and what doesn't work. You know, one kind of cool thing that we're doing is I'm experimenting with vermicomposting, and we have this massive heat pile with you know, with drip tape, and it gets watered twice a day, and there's composting worms in there, you know, and we get food, and we get food scraps from a grocery store, and they can't sell anymore. And we go and we put it in this giant heat pile of composted horse manure. And then the worms break it down, and we're multiplying a worm population. And then we can use that, the worm castings, to put back into the soil. I mean, you can't make better compost. And, you know, so we're making our own compost too. So we're kind of doing this full cycle of, of producing compost, putting back in the soil, getting the plants to grow and to be very healthy. If you have very healthy plants, usually the plant can resist, insects that are harmful. And so it's so we're learning a lot. We're really pushing the envelope in terms of what can and can't be done. And I think in all of it, God's being glorified, because I think if you have a beautiful site with amazing tasting produce, and then at the end of it all, if the supply chain breaks down again, you know, you're gonna have this local place of, you know, a food source and even a water source, because there's a well there. So so God's hands on it, and we're being faithful just to go through it, and it's been hard work. It's also fun, so I think it's important, fun and hard work, but it's been really good.
Yeah, that's awesome. I want to, Casey, tell me a little bit more about the actual land. If you're Lubbock area folks, y'all know what this, I mean, we're talking in urban, you know, inside the city limits, urban abandoned lot, really is what I'd call it. And y'all seen these around town, just, I mean, dirt, just totally barren. Usually some little prairie dogs, you know, in there, and just looks like a wasteland. So tell me more what you've, I know you said God showed you go to the east and you found it before and all that, but that land was talk about that.
Well, God definitely directed us there. I think he opened up doors. I think the land was an affordable price. And but when me and Chris started walking around, you know, there was lots of trash just from the years of being empty that we picked up and cleaned, but just stickers upon stickers and goat heads and just all kinds of weeds. And so, you know, it really reminded me of, as I start to learn how to become a farmer, God teaches me personally in my spiritual walk about there's so much to learn about him and his nature and just what he wants us to know through agriculture, through land, through his creation. And, you know, it says in Genesis that after Adam and Eve disobeyed God, that they had to work the land by the sweat of their brow for their food, and the land would be cursed with stickers and thorns. And so when I go out there and we first started, you know, we would walk around and it was just nothing but stickers and prairie dogs everywhere. Yeah, it was a prairie dog town. And so I'm sure many skeptics would say, you're crazy. Why would you go there with all these prairie dogs and all these stickers? I mean, there's way better places to farm than this. But when we got our well drilled, kind of an affirming sign was we had a really strong well. And I mean, we were producing like 50 gallons a minute. It wasn't that deep. It was just like really good water. I mean, and if you research wells in West Lubbock and even some other areas around Lubbock, they go dry and they're not good wells around there. But this well is really powerful, really strong, and it's good. And so that was a huge blessing that we had such a good well. And we had no idea going there that that was the case. We bought the land before we knew any of that. But the stickers, you know, when I walk out there and when Chris and myself would walk out there and pray, and as we started beginning to work the land and lay drip tape down and do, you know, our hands would get poked. But that reminded me of how, you know, our life is, one, before we meet Christ and give our lives to Christ, and he really can take over. But even as Christians, as we're walking, it's so easy to allow the thorns and the stickers to come into our lives and just entangle us. You know, our sin can cause us to be less fruitful and have less dense, nutritious fruit in our life because we need to get rid of some of these things out of our life. It could be social media. It could be, you know, you can name whatever it is, but God teaches us through his creation. And he's teaching me as I become a farmer about weeds and thorns. They're a reminder to us that we live in a fallen world, and that we have to work hard for our food. I mean, I think God told us we had to work hard for a reason, and it's to our benefit. And so it was a desolate wasteland. And like I mentioned earlier, when we drilled a well, and we were so thankful and grateful we finally got that water, it was like it reminded us of the Holy Spirit just coming, you know, into someone's life and completely transforming it. Because now we could water the ground. And so we could plant seeds and have a way to water it. And then God slowly has been slowly transforming it. And I wanted to touch on this one with the produce and even the flowers, all the things that are growing out there. You know, Elohim, Natah, God planted these things. And so Dr. Edwards said at the beginning about how the world is trying to genetically modify everything that God made. They're trying to just completely make it different. It's unhealthy for your bodies. They're trying to just, I don't know, fabricate meat out of a petri dish. They're trying to make all these, you know, things that aren't real. But God created these things from the beginning, it says. And he said it was good. So what God created was good. We shouldn't mess with that. And so we want to bring that back to whoever wants to enjoy what God created. And so when that's the big push for our name is God created this. It's his creation. We don't get any credit for it. Enjoy what he created. So the stickers, the land, the barren land, we always have stickers to fight. Like Chris said, it's kind of a never-ending battle. But slowly and surely, if you just put in the work and you just focus on one area, you can manage one area well, and then you can kind of move on to another area.
Yeah, and I can testify. I mean, I've only walked out on the land a couple times probably, but just I drive by it every day because I live out east of Lubbock. And from downtown, I just drive right by it. incredible. I mean, even like the first year when y'all started, you know, we'll talk about that after the break. We're up against the break, but just seeing what started coming up out of the soil, the trees you planted, of course, all the flowers, and like, man, all of a sudden this, I mean, I've tried to do a little gardening myself, and kind of like Chris was saying, you put a seed in, you water, you expect this plant to sprout up and bountiful growth to happen, and it didn't happen in my garden too much, but it seemed like, boom, just the first year even, it was just everywhere where the plants were growing and thriving. So, I mean, speaks to, I agree, God's hand on it, but also y'all's diligence in working hard, planning and learning and stewarding. So we're going to talk about some of that after the break. So I'm interested in some of the technical stuff too. I know you drilled the well, but then the solar powered part of it, and then just kind of how y'all decided to lay it out. What are some of the specifics of how you're actually growing some of this stuff? Because it's amazing. I just had some of the zucchini last week. Just the color of that. And I know different varieties could maybe have different colors and stuff, but I don't think I'd ever seen a color so just deep and rich. And like you said, nutrition, flavor goes together, and color too. Just amazing. So, and butternut squash, that was last year. We got to benefit from a lot of awesome butternut squash. So guys, if y'all were at our butternut squash classes last year, and the soups and the different casseroles and things we made, that was from Chris and Casey's farm. Okay, we're up against this break. We're going to continue with Casey and Chris and the amazing work they're doing out on the farm in East Lubbock. So y'all stick with us. I'm Dr. Ben Edwards. You're the cure. All right, we are back with Chris and Casey talking about Elohim Nata. Got to remember that. And usually I ask our guests to kind of give websites or Facebooks or however people can follow you or support you. And so maybe talk about that real quick. I know we mentioned at the top of the show, Veritas, the Merck at Veritas is getting the benefit right now. And in the future, maybe some restaurants, maybe some farmers markets, stuff like that. So definitely, guys, come down to the Merck and we can help share this with the community. But anyways, guys, that people could support you or follow you, or if they're interested or want to communicate with you or learn from you or any...
we just started. It's brand new. We just started an Instagram page, but Elohim Nata Farms, and
okay, awesome.
they can look that up.
Cool. Well, can y'all share a little bit? I don't know if this would be more crisp, but just to me, the infrastructure of it, the technology you mentioned. I mean, it seems like every time I drive by, there's a new something, structure, panels, rows. You mentioned the compost and wood chips and all kinds of stuff. Kind of walk through how it started, you know, maybe the solar panel stuff, the layout, the trees, kind of what's the overall arching, like the plan that you are putting together out there.
Yeah. You know, and I wanted to touch on a little bit, cause this will lead into this, about the desolate landscape, mm-hmm. And just kind of relating it back to Israel, because again, we are copying a lot of what they're doing in Israel. In 1867, Mark Twain toured the land of Israel, known back then as Palestine, and he described the land like this: a desolate country whose soil is rich enough but is given over wholly to weeds, a silent, mournful expanse. A desolation is here that not even imagination can grace with the pomp of life and action. We never saw a human being on the whole route. There was hardly a tree or a shrub anywhere. Even the olive and the cactus, those fast friends of the worthless soil, had almost deserted the country.
Wow.
And that's really what the land was like when Case and I first looked at it. But in Israel, there's a mindset, because they've gone through so much hardship and overcome so many challenges, and they have this ability to turn a curse into a blessing.
Mm-hmm.
And so I kind of relish that opportunity. I see like this, what looks like this, like this is a bad idea. You know, like I had a friend who works, they buy land, buildings. And strategic spots in Lubbock, and they'll like, you know, use it for commercial running. They'll renovate it or flip it, and they're a pretty big operation. I was like, what do you think of this land I bought here, that Case and I bought here in East Lubbock? And I didn't tell him we bought it. I was like, would you recommend buying a land like this in this location? And he was like, it'd be a terrible idea. I was like, well, I bought it. And so there was nothing strategic. It was like the land itself was just bad. But following that is really that Jewish mindset, turning a curse into a blessing. and in seeing what Israel is doing. Okay, so one of the first things we did was everything's going to be drip irrigation. Also, everything needs to be automated because the climate out here in West Texas is very unforgiving. Like I have, when I first started and I didn't have any kind of automation, we would just, you know, hand water, you know, and that you need to be very diligent and very disciplined in your scheduling, because if you miss like a week, like if you go on vacation, you come back, you had like months of hard work, plants are dead, just, you know, 1 week or 2 weeks of not watering. So the first thing was getting the automation of the watering down. And there are very good components for that now. And they're mass produced now. I mean, this was back in 2015 when we were doing it. But we, the system we have this, 12, it's a, we have 12 valves, and the agricultural computer system we can individually water each zone and on timers, and we can set up to 4 times. So I can like water one area twice a day for 30 minutes. I can water another area specifically, you know, on just really specific intervals. Mm-hmm. And that was really important because now once we get a system set up, I can literally, again, farming is not our full-time job. Like, you know, both Casey and I, this is more like I won't say a hobby, but this is like, we have our main lines of work, you know, and so farming is not, it's really a full-time job. But when you automate things, you can at least,
you can keep your day job.
Correct. Yeah. And so once we set up like a row or a zone and we get the water set up, again, there's weed management, but I know it's going to be watered. I know I can come back and I know that the plants are alive. And even in this heat right now, like that the plants are alive because it's being watered on regular intervals. So that was first and foremost the most important thing, is regular watering on control on timers, when knowing and that's dependable, knowing that it'll be wet, that the plants will have water even if I'm not there. And then, you know, when Casey has a lot of skill in home building and putting up structures, and he has a lot of really good ideas in terms of actually like getting ideas and making it tangible and making it physical, executing. Mm-hmm. And, you know, one of the things that was kind of neat was the idea of solar panels and then getting a pump and then having it all work in an automated way where we won't have to pay like a monthly electric bill. There's some upfront cost, but we have 10 solar panels that produce about 360 volts of DC current that go into a variable AC converter that powers the pump. And then the agricultural timer, the ag timer, whenever it turns a valve on, which sends water to a zone, there's also it also sends a signal to the AC box, send it to the pump and it tells the pump. So when the valve turns on, the pump turns on. Mm-hmm. And then when the valve turns off, the pump turns off. Mm-hmm. And as opposed to like more primitive ways would be like you have like you have a tank and you fill it up with water and then you stop right there. And then so the ag timer turns the pump on and off. And that was kind of like, I don't think there's many people in Lubbock doing specifically that. And so that was kind of neat. So it's a really, because if you turn a pump on and off a lot, it wears down the pump. So that was a pretty efficient system. And then once you have water, and then we have free energy using the sun, and in Lubbock, you get a lot of sun. So it's working out really well. Mm-hmm. I mean, we can't water early in the mornings and we can't water late at nights, but we have water for like six to, depending on the season, you know, 6 to 10 hours. Mm-hmm. So or 8 hours. So that's working really great, you know. And when we were coming into this, we didn't know exactly how it would work. There was a lot of unknowns, but it has worked beautifully. So I am a proponent of solar panels, solar technology, and the technology is coming also for being able to store that power from the sun into batteries, and that's becoming cheaper. So what's interesting, if you look at Ukraine, one of the things that like the battle, the war between Ukraine and Russia, one of the things that have allowed Ukraine, one of the things they didn't expect that has helped Ukraine were the facilities that had solar panels, because Russia would go after their main energy sources. And so, but the areas that had solar panels were able to still operate. And so that was interesting too, you know. So from a perspective of, again, going back to you know, we have all these good years in the U.S. You know, we have a very stable economy. You know, for the most part, our supply chain is very stable. But you don't know what the future holds. And again, my grandfather went through Great Depression, World War II in his lifetime. We have no idea what will come in our lifetime. And so I think having an independent energy source is smart, is very valuable, and becomes very valuable when events are not ideal. Mm-hmm. So I think it's good to explore when you have the freedom and the resources and the time to do it, because when the time comes, it might be too late. So
I did want to add something that related to the solar, because when we bought the land and we made a plan, my background is in building, kind of developing, designing things. I drew up kind of a map of the land, of where we'd plant trees, the structures, just some zones. It wasn't like perfect, but it was kind of an idea to start. And so we first built the well house because we needed some sort of a structure to store a tractor and some farming equipment. So after that was built, after the well was drilled, and the well house was built, we had to make a decision about solar. And like I said, me and Chris, we try to be faithful to meet and pray together and for God's guidance. And I really think God guided us in the direction of solar. Because at first, we both didn't know. We didn't have a strong, like, well, we should definitely do solar for these reasons. We were considering solar, but maybe we should do just hook to the grid. But we weighed the cost, how much it would be to go solar versus how much it would connect to the grid. And and virtually, it was going to be the same because I was doing the work, so we weren't getting charged for someone else to do it for us. So, but because Chris was praying, I was praying, we were praying together, we both had a unity, like we both felt like going solar was the right way. And, you know, we did have the upfront cost, as Chris mentioned, to buy the equipment and get it installed. But I've been very thankful, and I think Chris as well, just that we did that way, because it's allowed us to water in such a vast amount without having a high electric bill or a high water bill, you know, because electricity has really fluctuated. And this was back in 2019 when we made these decisions. To do all this. So we did not have any knowledge that COVID was about to come and all these breakdowns were coming or any of this. It was just the prompting of the Holy Spirit and through prayer, God leading us. And I think I just wanted to make that point that I think God led us both to do the solar panels.
Yeah, and there's something very liberating about free energy and free water. I mean, we're not going to, like, misuse or mismanage water, and I am for regulation to a certain degree, but there's a lot of freedom when you don't have that kind of overhead cost. And it sounds free energy. I mean, that's pretty amazing.
Yeah.
And I think the other really important component, I mean, and this is less technology, more I guess biology, soil biology, but composting mm-hmm. has been something that has been really important probably from the very beginning. And so what's amazing is that God has, you know, it's important to look at the world the same way God sees it. And you know, God's the designer. He's the architect of this world. And when you observe creation, you see that there's this breakdown of, whether it's, manure or, wood rotting on the floor of a rainforest. I mean, there's this breakdown. And when it breaks down, it becomes useful for plants, and it's highly nutritious for plants. And there is this process for of taking resources that nobody wants, like horse manure. Like, we have a connection with I think it's a equestrian center, and we're able to get all the horse manure, and then there's this process of converting it to compost, and we hot compost it. And so with the tractor, we can make this big pile, and the pile gets about 150 degrees in there when you keep turning it. And it turns what looks like, you know, straw and horse manure, and it turns into this kind of like this kind of black texture, and then also you can use that for vermicomposting, for worm composting. And so you can take and then you can get food scraps, food that you would normally throw away, you know, like you can compost on a small scale and a big scale, but new food that you would normally throw away, you can reuse that into your garden. And if you do it in a right way, it is you can create you can create organic matter that becomes available for your plant to feed off. You know, when you put it in the ground, it has, you know, it can last for like 8 months, and it's great for the plant. So you have this amazing recycling process that we see that you can observe in God's creation, and then you can find ways of implementing it and speeding it up and making it faster. And so So I think another component is just that the composting part of it. And and we do make a lot of our own compost. We do also source some very high quality compost locally here in town from a trusted contact. But compost is very important because if the soil is nutritious and your plants are going to be healthy, and plants have they have their own immune system, and they can actually fight off harmful insects. Mm-hmm. And so if you give plants what they need, they're going to be able to take care of themselves. So yeah. It's interesting because sometimes you have to learn the scientific details whenever there's a problem. But if you do things the right way, you don't have to go down all those rabbit trails.
Yeah.
And it's kind of nice. I've gone down enough rabbit trails where I don't want to have to learn every single nuance about, the plant, structure. And then this plant needs this. But I think if you create very healthy soil and you kind of, in a way, cop what you see in nature, in God's creation, if you can kind of implement that and reproduce that, mm-hmm. you're going to have a very successful crop. So.
Yeah. Yeah, very similar in the human body. Give the body what it needs, avoid what it doesn't, it'll fix itself. And it's very complex and lots of nuances and lots of pathways you could learn, and all these problems can come, and then you can try to micromanage each problem individually or just get to the very basic, give the body what God intended for it to have, and it'll function, operate, and all that complexity is still happening, but you don't have to micromanage, you don't have to know all that, and similar to what you're saying. Get the basics right, mimic God's design and nature and what you see in nature. That's awesome.
Yeah, another something that's interesting about that is, there's one particular season we were having a lot of problem with aphids, like mm-hmm. massive amount of problem with aphids. And this is like early spring. But when you have a variety of plants, in your garden, in your farm, because, a farm is, when you observe nature, it's not just one type of plant. There's a variety of plants, mm-hmm. and different plants attract different types of insects. Insects bring in birds, and you have this thriving ecosystem. And so, once it was early in the spring, but once some of the other plants started coming up, the ladybugs started coming, and there are certain flowers that attract lots and lots of ladybugs, and so it kind of balanced out the misproportioned. We had too many aphids and not enough ladybugs, but eventually it balanced, and right now the farm is healthy. We don't have any serious insect problems, but that was just an example of there was an imbalance, mm-hmm. And then the beneficial insects came, and that helped just to create a stable just management of the insects, and so it's just interesting. So you also want variety because you see that in nature, and not to say you have to operate exactly like that, but it is something that's interesting that I've observed. So I think having a healthy variety of things in an area can be very helpful.
Speaking of variety, what are the things you're growing? What did you start growing initially, and what seemed to really maybe thrive? And then what are you growing now, and specifically even like right now? But kind of go through that process. I know y'all planted a bunch of fruit trees originally,
there's a proverb I think Chris told me: the best time to plant a tree was last year. Mm-hmm. So one of the very first things we did plant many, many fruit trees, looking ahead for maybe another 2 or 3 years from now that they'll be, Lord willing, and they'll be producing a lot of fruit so we can supply the Merck or other people, but. So we're looking forward to that harvest. So we did get a lot of different varieties of fruit trees planted, fig trees, plums, peaches, apples, apricots, lots of varieties. So we last year was a kind of our first kind of year of planting vegetables out there, really an experimental year. God taught me so much last year personally, just because it was one of my first years really growing. Chris had more experience than me. But one of the cool stories about last year was unexpected. We planted tomatoes and okra and potatoes, all kinds of stuff. But I planted some watermelon, and Chris gave me this packet that he had, and it saved as like best watermelon that he tasted or something from somewhere. He saved the seeds, and so I planted them. Well, they produced this yellow watermelon, and they weren't. And Chris doesn't remember the watermelon being yellow. He said it was red when he originally saved it, but. We had these yellow watermelons that just tasted amazing, and we don't know why they grew that way, but we gave all of them away, and that's One of the biggest things, at least, that we try to do is give our first fruits away to God. And so when we first have a harvest of whatever variety, we want to give it away to God. And the way we do that is we give it away to our friends, to our neighbors that we're forming relationships with out there, just to people who God has put in our path. So we were giving away our first fruits of many things, and specifically the watermelon. And all the time we're praying for God's guidance. And God, would you direct us on how to set up the infrastructure, which way to go, on what to plant next year, on these different things. Well, God sent many signs of affirmation about planting more watermelons this year. So, for example, we met, as we were praying diligently, like I said, we've met one guy who just finished his PhD in vegetable science at Tech, and he was moving away, but he came out there and he was moving to North Carolina to do research on watermelons. But he gave us all kinds of tips, and he was guiding us to use like organic liquid fertilizer, and he gave us lots of information about just plants in general. Another guy we met was Zoran from South Africa, who Chris had got in contact with to come out and fix another tractor that we had out there. It wasn't ours, but we were using it. So he came out there to fix it. But Zoran was a mechanic, but he grew up in South Africa on a 100-acre farm growing watermelons. And he taught us, or he gave us all these tips on how to do watermelon stuff. And so we are implementing some of that this year. And there were more signs, but those are some big ones there. So we just felt like God was directing us, because who doesn't like a good tasting watermelon in July? And we had cantaloupes last year. So this year we hoped, we're trying to be faithful and obedient to this guiding. We planted a huge section of different types of watermelons, and Lord willing, we'll have some of those yellow ones again. But we planted maybe like, I would say, 6 to 7 different varieties, maybe even 10 varieties of watermelons, different types of melons like cantaloupes and honeydew melons. And so we're hoping, you know, in another month or so, they'll be ready and you can come to the Merc and get all those fruits. But we also will have potatoes really soon to harvest, purple potatoes and red potatoes and Yukon gold potatoes. So you'll be able to, you know, go to the Merc and buy those. I think we're going to have some lemon cucumbers coming. It's just a variety of cucumber. We already have the yellow or the golden zucchini and the green zucchini and some yellow squash. And also we'll have pretty soon is okra. So as Dr. Edwards mentioned, you can come to the Merc and buy some of this to can or to preserve for food storage. So it's good for that, but it's also good to cook fresh. I think we have some fruit that we harvested this year from our fruit trees, but not much. And I know we're also experimenting with planting plants like peanuts and crimson clover to put nitrogen back in the soil. So we're trying to use other plants to grow and put in nutrients back into the soil so we can plant some winter crops like garlic. We also will have onions coming, because the onions, we did plant onions, so we'll have onions soon. I'm sure I'm missing a lot of stuff, but the big thing we're trying to be faithful is the watermelons. And so we really want to be faithful and obedient to what his guiding was, and we think watermelons are one way he's guiding us.
You know, it's our niche that we have is we're growing produce that you know, the heirloom varieties, and they're very unique varieties. These are varieties that you're not going to find at a store. So you may go to the grocery store, and there may be like, I don't know, 3 or 4 types of tomatoes. So we're, you know, the type of tomatoes we're growing are pretty unique. But as an example, like the watermelon that we grew. I mean, I've been eating watermelon since I was a kid. Love watermelon. A good cold watermelon after a soccer game or something. Amazing. But I was working at the farm. I don't think I had any water like for like a good part of the day. I just showed up and I didn't bring any food with me or anything. So I was working pretty hard and I was pretty pretty thirsty. And Casey, you know, brought, I guess it was like maybe like the first or second watermelon. And it was a yellow watermelon. And it was the best tasting watermelon I've ever had. And I know food can taste really good when you're pretty hungry. But, you know, even the second time I had it and the third time I had it, literally the best tasting watermelon I've ever had. Wow. And that's been a common trend. Like the best peach I've ever had came from a farm that was up in Oregon, kind of on the east side of Oregon. And it was that the peach literally melted in my mouth. Like, I'm like, I've never had an experience like this before. And so, you know, so you know, that's the kind of experience that we want to bring to people, you know, in our area is, you know, food is, there's a higher bar, I'm saying, than what you see at the grocery store. And so you can buy watermelons from the grocery store and, you know, you can get lucky and unlucky. And even when you're lucky, it's okay. It's pretty good. I mean, but my standards have changed now because I've had this amazing watermelon. Mm-hmm. It was, I mean, and there are dozens and dozens of types of watermelons, you know, mm-hmm. and we at the store, you only explore like two or three varieties. So mm-hmm. that's something that's going to be kind of a niche for us. We're going to keep growing very unique varieties of produce. So another variety I'm really excited about is there is a certain melon, kind of like a cantaloupe. It's a melon. And it's then there's an interesting story behind it. There's Thomas Jefferson was, you know, among his many skills and abilities, was also a farmer and collected seeds. You know, and he passed away, but they had a seed collection. And he had this certain melon that he collected from France, brought it back to the U.S., and you know, he grew it and kept it. And people, all these generations, have kept this particular melon has a French name. I can't remember the French name, but I call it the Jefferson melon. But but people have preserved the seed, and you can buy it, you know, online, various websites. You can't buy it. You can't find it, you know, here in Lubbock. But and a little packet costs a, you know, it's quite a bit for a little packet of seeds. But I grew it 5 years ago, and I remember cutting it open, and it was the best melon I've ever had. Like I bought melons at the store, and they're actually I don't get excited about cantaloupes and melons usually because they're not that great. But I bought this, like, this is amazing. Like, why haven't I had this before? And so we're growing a lot. We're growing, we have a good 60-foot row just of this Jefferson melon. And so, and that's fun. And it's a little bit of a history behind that one. But so we're growing things like that. It's a lot of heirloom, very unique varieties that are just going to be just different and interesting to try.
Mm. That's awesome. Man, y'all are making me hungry. Just run out to the farm on the way home real quick.
Sounds good. Stop by.
We probably have five more minutes or so. We'll have to wrap it up. So, any kind of closing thoughts, or, you know, if someone's getting really encouraged and maybe wants to plant a garden, any kind of beginner's tips, or, I mean, you kind of mentioned already the automated watering system, pretty huge, it sounds like, but for your basic kind of person motivated to get out in their backyard and do something, what would you tell them?
I would, you have to embrace technology. I know for a lot of people it can be a challenge. So I would say you have to become comfortable with technology. In the, you know, in the programming world, there's any person studying any kind of engineering, any kind of serious science, they have to have programming abilities because it's kind of like the new handwriting. And you really can't be an efficient, you know, student in the engineering department or in the science department if you don't have any kind of programming skills, even basic programming. And so in the same way, I think in this day and age, you have to embrace technology, and it's going to make your life easier. I know that it can be challenging and frustrating and overwhelming, but in the end, I think that's, we see God moving Israel in that direction. And, you know, our minds are amazing. We have the capability and capacity to learn new things. So I think having that mindset is important. And then, you know, reading, just, you know, and asking for help. You know, there's so many helpful resources. I mean, I think I'm a product of just YouTube. I can't tell you. I mean, I've watched so many YouTube videos on Israeli farming techniques, and I've never been to Israel, but I have watched a lot of videos on it. So I think just, you know, just being willing to educate yourself and is going to be really important, because you'll come up with your own ideas, your own creative ideas. For your own basic garden, you know, I would say, the first thing you want to do, especially in West Texas, is to automate your watering. And there are simple little devices that you can attach to a hose that, you know, that have that little timers that can turn your water on and off. And I would also go in the direction of drip irrigation. And that's pretty basic, but I know for some people maybe that would be new. And it's a lot of work getting it set up at first, but then it pays dividends later on.
Mm-hmm. I had just some closing thoughts. I mean, one, yeah, don't be scared to try it. Just get out there. If you're interested in growing, if you feel like you're being guided in that way, just try it. You know, you can get a plastic container, fill it with some soil, put some plants in it, water it by hand, and just watch it. God will teach you something through one plant. And when you get that fruit and you see it, it's just like an amazing testimony to his creation. And Chris had mentioned this earlier. If you guys are interested in learning more about what we're doing and just want to get to know us or just want to come out, on Friday nights, we do, you know, kind of a community event, sometimes on Saturdays too, but, you know, come out and just get to know us. It's usually a group out there, and you can talk to Chris or myself and just ask questions about farming or just hang out. And it's just, we really want to build relationships. That's a big part of what we're doing, is really building relationships with the neighbors there, building relationships with people that come to the farm, ultimately just to speak gospel truths and plant gospel seeds. And a term, gospel farming, has kind of been coined as we have been developing out there. And we say gospel farming as we want to plant seeds in people's lives and people's hearts through real farming. And so that's kind of a term we say, gospel farming. And another big thing that's really important to me, and I think maybe to some of the listeners or to Chris as well, is I wanted to teach my children about how to grow their own food. I think that's going to be so crucial for their life. I don't know what's going to happen in our world, but if they had this skill where they knew how to plant their own food and grow their own food, that's only going to benefit them going forward. And I just had that that prompting that I needed to teach my children this skill. And so if you have kids and you have a, you know, family or just whatever, just come out and or do it yourself, because I think it's a really, really neat way to learn about creation, but also it's only going to be a skill that you're going to benefit from. And so I think, you know, growing stuff to benefit our children is a big motivation also for why we're doing some of these things.
Yeah. Wow. What a story. Thank y'all so much. Y'all are amazing men that love the Lord and, you know, being guided by Holy Spirit to do what you're doing. And I mean, guys, until y'all see the farm, you really can't appreciate and see some of the desolate areas in East Lubbock and just all around West Texas, but the desolate land of what it is now. And this is their, and this is on the side. I mean, we didn't really emphasize that. I mean, Chris is a builder. I mean, Casey's a builder. Chris is a computer programmer. I mean, they've got jobs, families, kids, life, and the dedication, the time, the commitment, you know, because God prompted them to this. So, I mean, that's a testimony in your obedience and God's faithfulness. I mean, to see the fruit that's coming out of your obedience and your love for God, love for people, that's just an amazing testimony. So thank you both for your, just personally, the example you're leading by. And, you know, so many people just, their motivation's not right. Their heart's not right. They're, you know, obviously y'all are kingdom minded. So thank you for being a great example. And if obviously thank you for sharing, being, letting the Merck and Veritas benefit, but the whole community to benefit through this. And, you know, any way we can support y'all, help y'all and help this whole project to flourish, it's going to benefit so many people. So just really appreciate y'all. Appreciate your time. I know you're busy. Friday afternoon, we're recording this, guys, and they came here after work on a hot day. Casey's been roofing all day, so really appreciate y'all.
We had a cold front today. It was 99.
Yeah, 108 tomorrow, I think, is the plan. So it's amazing that your garden's going to survive this heat. That's a testimony in and of itself. All right, everybody, this show will be archived on our website, veritasmedical.com, under the resource page, under the podcast archive page. It'll also be on iTunes under You're the Cure. So y'all check that out, share it with your friends, get out to the farm, get to the Merck if you want to enjoy this produce. I'm sure we'll have some classes this summer, too, on how to can and how to prepare some of this great, bountiful produce coming out of the farm. So Elohim Nata, planted in East Lubbock. So thank you guys again. We'll be back next week with another show. I'm Dr. Ben Edwards. You're the Cure.